The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Happy New Year. Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show. I am delighted to be joined by Phil Knox, an Evangelism and Missiology Senior Specialist at the Evangelical Alliance. Phil is also the author of two books, Storybearer and most recently, The Best of Friends. Phil, thank you so much for coming on the C.S. Lewis Podcast.
So good to be with you, Ruth. And what an absolute wonderful opportunity to talk about C.S. Lewis together. Just fabulous.
Oh, I'm so excited. Well, we heard a bit of your story on the Unapologetic podcast. So if you want to hear more from Phil, then do check that out. But as you say, this is the C.S. Lewis podcast. So before we delve into some of the things that you love about him, I would just love to know, what was your first encounter with Lewis? How did you come across him?
I was a child in the 1990s. And I don't know if you remember the beautiful BBC adaptations of the Chronicles of Narnia. So I think absolutely. Jumping that kind of, I could picture the theme song, you know, the camera going over the map and being, I had nightmares of the kind of the portrayal of the White Witch. You know, I probably fell in love with Lucy. You know, that for me was just such a powerful. And then the kind of, as a Christian child as well, to begin to understand something of the truths of the gospel through those stories has been a profound, you know, had a profound impact on my life.
I mean, this might be sort of like asking you to pick your favourite child, but do you have a favourite quote or book or idea of C.S. Lewis? And if you do, why is that your favourite?
Yeah, loads. I mean, I think probably for me, maybe controversially for some listeners, I think Silverchair is probably my favourite. I think as a kind of allegory of the Christian life, the battles we face, the themes of kind of obedience and truth, as an optimist, I never really got the character of Puddleglum. But I think, again, if I'm looking for a favourite character in Narnia, it's probably Puddleglum in his, you know, in his obedience. That stunning scene, a sequence of events in the underworld with the Queen of the Underworld, the release of Prince Rillian, the monologue of Puddleglum within that, you know, I think it's combined something with, you know, where he's kind of in conversation with the Queen of the Underworld, who says there is no overworld, there is no Aslan, and he says, you know, but four babies playing a game can make a world that licks your real world hollow. Even if there isn't Aslan, I'm going to follow him. You know, even if there isn't a Narnia, I'm going to be a Narnian. And do you know what I mean? I think sometimes as a Christian, you kind of go, you know, just draws something out of you in a way that says, even if there isn't a Jesus, I'm going to live like a Christian. But there is a Jesus. There is an Aslan. You're like, come on. So yeah, I think that for me, the silver chair just captivated me from start to finish.
Now, Phil, you recently finished reading the Chronicles of Narnia with your son. We're going to hear about your experience of that in a minute. But why did you decide to do that? And sort of how did you go about doing it? Just paint a bit of a picture of what, you know, kind of what your thinking was behind doing that. Was it something that was done with you when you were a child?
Good question. I can't really remember. I think more or less it was the 1990s.
It was the film.
That was my education. I think I did read the books after that. I think for me, like most of us parents, Ruth, I'm making it up as I go along, but you know, people tell me in the books tell me I need to read with my children. And so probably kind of growing up, we grew out of Dog Man or whatever, you know. Okay, I've got a 10-year-old, and probably when he was kind of, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, just began to think, you know, what stories can we read together? And so we just began reading, I think the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, then back to Magician's Nephew, and then all the way through. But I think what inspired it was just amazing stories, amazing storytelling. Nothing deeper than that, probably. It's been an important ritual and rhythm for us to read with our kids before bed, and that was a Narnia seemed like the best place to go.
Now, Phil, you said that you found yourself crying while reading some of these passages with your son, much to his confusion. I want to hear a little bit about why he was so confused with you crying. But also then we're going to talk about what some of those moments were and why they moved you so profoundly. But before we do that, why was he so confused that you were crying?
Well, I just think there's just depths on the two. I think, I don't know about you, Ruth. I think I've read the Chronicles of Narnia at probably a few intervals of my life. So I did read them as a child. I then probably read them. I can't really remember. I think I probably read them all again in my kind of 20s and understood a bit more and was moved a bit more. And then again, as I hurtle towards 40, read them again with Caleb. And I think every time as you grow in your understanding of life, and your experience of God and your journey of faith and just as tragedy has struck and you've been through the battles and blessings of life, those stories just begin to resonate in different ways. And so for me, why was he so confused? Well, I was reading about Aslan dying on the stone table. And of course, as a committed, passionate follower of Jesus, all I'm seeing is Jesus dying on the cross and the beautiful allegory and all of that. And in that moment where you read about a lion dying on a fictional lion dying on a fictional stone table, you reflect on the real sacrifice that the King of the world made, dying on a Roman cross, and my own brokenness and sin. And in that, I embody Edmund, whose life has been set free so that he can be free and become a son in Narnia. In the same way, I've been set free so I can be all I can be by the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's why I was crying.
But your son says, Daddy, it's only a lion.
And one day my son will read them and he will weep with as great enthusiasm, because genetics is a terrible thing.
Well, let's talk a bit about The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, because obviously for so many people that has had such a profound impact on them. What are some of the key moments within The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe that has so moved you, and so moved you when you were reading them with your son? You've obviously touched on the death and the resurrection of Aslan, but what are some of the other moments?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads. I've got my little copy here from childhood. There you go. Look at that with my little tabs. Yeah, I mean, I think the first one I would say is kind of, there's this moment, isn't there, where they say Aslan is on the move, perhaps has already landed. And then it says, then a curious thing happened. None of the children that knew who Aslan was, but they behaved quite differently. Perhaps it's happened to you in a dream that someone says something you don't understand. But in the dream, it feels like it's had an enormous meaning. Yeah, I think there's something, isn't there, about, I think if you are a Christian in 21st century Britain, you long for something else. You long for something more. You know, for me as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, I look at the world in desperate need of hope. I look at my friends who desperately need to know Jesus. I look at the global challenges we face. I look at the darkness in our world, the cost of living crisis, threat of World War III. And I'm like, come Lord Jesus. I think when you're confronted with the reality of the darkness around us, what you want is something beautiful and something to king of the kingdom to break in. And they say Aslan is on the move. You're like, getting choked to think about. Because I'm like, they say the kingdom is coming. They say there might be hope. They say there are people becoming Christians. They say revival's on the way. Something in me is like, come on, God, and of course, then we know as the story pans out that the way that manifests itself in C.S. Lewis's beautiful allegory is that the rain of winter in Narnia just what spring comes, it's more than a thaw. I think there's a moment where the dwarf says, this isn't a thaw, my lady, this is spring, and you're like, and then naturally, I think what happens is you go, let that happen in our time. Let that happen in our world. They say Aslan is on the move. So there you go, is the first one. The second one, I love the kind of moment in, where kind of there's been the reuniting of the family at Aslan's How, and there's that moment where the Queen and the White Witch and Aslan go off for a chat, and Aslan comes back and he says, "I've settled the matter. She has renounced the claim on your brother's blood." And again, because we know what happens in the story, because we know that the price for Aslan for saying those words is to die a humiliating and excruciating death, and the shame and the pain, he will bear the weight of all that on Edmund. In that moment, we as the reader become Edmund, and the devil has to renounce the claim on our blood as traitors of the High King because of what God has done for us on the cross. And of course, there are weaknesses theologically you can put up all that. But at the same time, there is the truth that death has no power over us. Death has lost its sting, as the Bible tells us. And that beautiful picture of that, Edmund deserves to die, but doesn't because she has renounced his claim on his blood. All those moments combined. And then you've got the big battle at the end, the victory. You're like, come on, God. All of that stuff kind of, I think, yeah, moves me deeply.
Well, I think so many people have read The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, watched it, you know, really resonate with lots of those things. But perhaps not everyone has gone on to read the rest of the Chronicles of Narnia. But you were really moved by a lot of the other books as well. Would you say just a little bit about what it was within The Horse and the Boy that moved you? I think you mentioned the speech of Aslan to Shasta, which is such a beautiful moment. Was there particular moments within that speech?
And it's a funny one, isn't it? Because it's probably the least read of the, I would guess, of the Chronicles of Narnia. It hasn't been dramatised in film as much. But there's this beautiful moment towards the end where throughout the story, if you don't know the story, there's this guy called Shasta who's running away, trying to get to Narnia. And he, various moments, cats or lions play a significant part in his life. And then he has this encounter as he's walking along with Aslan, and it says that where Aslan says, I was the lion who forced you to join with Aravis, which is a kind of catalytic friendship Shasta has. I was the cat who comforted you in the houses of the dead. I was the lion who drove the jackals from you while you slept. I was the lion who gave the horses the strength of fear for the last mile. I was the lion who you do not remember, who pushed the boat in which you lay, a child near death, so that it came to shore where a man sat, wakeful at midnight to receive you. And I think as I kind of read that again, I'm like, how often in our lives has God been there in the back? How often has the Lion of Judah been the lion for us in terms of giving us comfort, protection, growth through pain, God's hand with us that we never see, but yet who guards our lives? And I think as I look back on kind of just circumstances in my life, I'm like, the hand of God's been there. And that's what's so beautiful. And then this kind of this narrative continues as this gradual revelation of Aslan comes to Shasta. And then there's this incredible passage at the end of the chapter, which says, the High King above all kings stooped towards him. Its mane and some strange and solemn perfume that hung about its mane was all around him. It touched his forehead with his tongue. He lifted his face and their eyes met. Then instantly the pale brightness of the mist and the fiery brightness of the lion rolled themselves together in a swirling glory and gathered themselves up and disappeared. He was alone with the horse on a grassy hillside under a blue sky, and there were birds singing. And I'm like, what an absolute incredible, you know, if you gave me one paragraph to consider what an encounter with Jesus looks like, the High King above all kings stooping to be with us, the kind of the beauty and the majesty of God who lifts us out of our brokenness to be with us, and the kind of then the beauty of creation all around us. I'm bowled away by that, and I think I had to pause through that while Caleb looked at me and went, Daddy, why are you crying?
It's just a lion.
Just a lion. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson, and wishing you a very happy new year. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And do register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.